Blog Talk Radio.
Nutshell, if we don't run Chris Christie, Romney will be the nominee on the list. Romney of the former, if amnesty goes through, it's over. You have 11 million instantly legalized. They are allowed to let in all of their distant family members under chain migration. We are talking about another 30 million unskilled immigrants, which is what they are. They will not be paying taxes. I don't know what Rand Paul thinks he's talking about. It will bankrupt the country. Moreover, contrary to what your friend Karl Rove says, Hispanics are not natural Republicans. This will be a disaster for the Republican Party. We'll never win another national election. Thank you, Marco Rubio. He is Jack of Orkings of the Republican Party, like Kelly Ayotte, whom I hope gets a primary opponent, and Marco Rubio, whom I hope gets a primary opponent, and the rest of them. They're going to pass an amnesty bill. If the House passes anything concerning immigration, and this is very important, Hannity viewers, so pay attention here, the House passes nothing but, say, enforce E-Verify. It goes into the conference between the two bodies, and it will come out an amnesty bill. At that point, if it is voted on in the House and voted on in the Senate, we have amnesty. The country is over, and the only thing left for people like you and me to do, Sean, is to punish the people who destroyed America.
I hope everybody heard us while we were talking, because I tell you what, I had it on mute the whole time,
Mike.
And we were doing a whole lot of talking. This is what happens. See,
we're sick.
When we're sick, and so I had it on. Oh, I only had it on for 15 minutes, mute. Oh, gosh.
Well, luckily we got through the news of the day, and we
It's time to go home. Thank you very much for listening
in.
Oh, well, let's do a short recap, because we got 15 minutes here.
Short recap. So,
Well, they must have heard you. No, they wouldn't hear you, because I moved you, too.
You
anyway.
This is
back,
the last word.
Slightly delayed. June 13th, 2013. I had it on mute, and I've been running around with chicken with our heads cut off, because the printer wouldn't print out our script. So we have to.
Well, here's the thing.
A little ad lib, but we have. Yes.
Chicken. Look, we've been watching these fools all week up in Washington follow themselves at this Christian Coalition conference. And what gets me about it is the Republican Party, which we've been talking about for 15 minutes now. But anyway, to recap, they don't learn their lessons.
They don't learn their lessons.
No matter how badly they lose elections, and no matter how many times they get told, if you don't correct your ways, you won't win another election,
right,
national election, they keep trying to out-extreme each other.
I was thinking about what you were saying, what you just said. And, the conclusion is they do not care about winning a national election.
No.
They don't even care about winning a lot of state elections or Senate elections. All they care about is winning the local elections, the sheriff and the judges and the city council and the county, because they want to change the Republican Party all the way from the socks up to the necktie.
True.
And you can't do it by starting at the top.
Well, sure. The sad thing is, and I mean, they.
Is it sad?
Yeah, it is.
For them.
Well, sad for them and sad for the country. Because, you know, they went through that period, I don't know, 40, 50 years, little period, where they couldn't win anything, and the Democrats controlled everything. You know, following the success of FDR, World War II, and all of these things. And so they had to retool and rethink. And they tried to come back, and of course, they came back in, you know, spades. With
Eisenhower did pretty good.
But they then retooled in the 80s, and their great awakening, you know, and just dispatched with the whole ideology of, you know, the false prophet Reagan here. But beyond all that, their big change was, and they got this by the marriage with the, you know, Swaggart and all of those guys when they had to, you know, go to the pulpit to get a coalition together. But their winning strategy was, hey, we can't win a national, can't do this, can't do that, but we can retake the local.
Right. Election.
You know, we can come in and force if we bring the whole church out, and we can take over the school board, and we can take over the, you know, county commission.
See, locally, and as a matter of fact, but see, the problem was they were only able to take it over strategically, regionally.
Yes.
They couldn't take it over nationally, only regionally.
But here's the thing, and I think they, you know, quote, learned a lesson and then also failed. And learning that lesson. But they learned a lesson that they could do it. Aha, we can do it. We can take things over. And so then, you know, we went through this whole period. Remember, the 80s was the start of all the stuff with school boards and everything when they started doing this. Let's take science out of schools and put the Bible back in. And
yeah.
That's a direct, you know, it's a one-to-one correlation with when you have to side with the evangelical mega church to win, you know, the local school board election, then you get those yahoos in office. And they want their payback, you know. So you end up with this a very skewed political mission, if you will, to it keeps going further and further and further right, veering into extreme territories. And that's exactly why we got to the position now where they have this false power. And a false message, if you will, that the Republicans somehow now have to, you know, present the Bible and executing foreigners as their
flesh. Yeah, but you see, the problem, yeah, but see, that's true, but the only problem why they came up with the Bible, because you know, what's the old saying here in the United States? Mom, apple pie. And the American flag.
Oh, I don't know.
So the thing is, they couldn't pitch ideas because they have no ideas. They couldn't pitch because the ideas that were so great in the 29s and 30s caused the crash. And the idea about building, about no longer pulling yourself by your bootstraps, but that it takes a village, that came in with FDR, and it went through Truman, and that's what grew the middle class. It wasn't the ideas from Hoover or Coolidge about pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. It was the idea about the collective. Right. And, hey, guess what? Every one of these fools out there that don't believe in socialism, give up your daggone Social Security check.
Yeah.
Don't contribute anymore, and don't touch it. That's what they need to do, because every fool that collects a Social Security check is a socialist.
Yeah. All
end of story.
I mean, look, the entire Western, as in all Western, Europe, you know, America, everything, the entire Western
John Wayne.
Style is
John
a
Wayne.
Blend.
John Wayne.
It's all a blend of capitalism and socialism. So
well, yeah.
That whole argument's over and done with. I'm tired of hearing.
Well,
that.
See, it depends on what kind of capitalism you have, because the Chinese have capitalism too.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. They actually have a more, you know, pure the
this is more pure capitalism.
Yeah, the right-wing Republicans will love that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's what they want to make here.
Yeah.
That's what they want to make here. We want to have the gulags, but we want the Rupert Murdochs to be trillionaires.
Yeah. And you know, it's just greed.
It's capitalism.
Yeah.
I pull myself up by my own bootstraps. I make my own money. If you don't do that, starve, slave.
Mm-hmm.
Get back
in
the gulag.
Except that, you know, that whole theory, it'd be fantastic if that was the actual truth.
Well, that's how it was.
That they rigged the entire system so that they don't have to pull themselves up by
the
bootstraps.
Well, every day.
Every kind of incentive.
Yeah.
Ever, and they crush everybody else.
Well, every day we're given this misdirection about, oh, yes, you know, it's you poor people did this, and you poor people did this, and oh, woe is me. I make so much money, and I can't do what I need to do because you poor people are stealing out of the mouth of my children.
Yeah.
I mean, give me a break here. Give me a break.
You know, feed the poor, help the poor children go to Head Start and all these other programs and dump them all in a bowl together, you wouldn't even, you know, pay for a third of the war.
And then we have, that's when we have the American terrorists.
They are fact that U.S. strikes have resulted in civilian casualties. A risk that exists in every world. And for the families of those civilians, no word or legal construct can justify their loss. For me and those in my chain of command, those deaths will haunt us as long as we live. But as Commander-in-Chief, I must weigh these heartbreaking tragedies against the alternative. To do nothing in the face of terrorist networks would invite far more civilian casualties, not just in our cities at home and our facilities abroad, but also in the very places like Sana'a and Kabul and Mogadishu, where terrorists seek a foothold. Remember that the terrorists we are after target civilians, and the death toll from their acts of terrorism against Muslims dwarfs any estimate of civilian casualties from drone strikes. So doing nothing is not an option. For the record, I do not believe it would be constitutional for the government to target and kill any U.S. citizen with a drone or with a shotgun without due process. Nor should any president deploy armed drones over U.S. soil. But when a U.S. citizen goes abroad to wage war against America and is actively plotting to kill U.S. citizens, and when neither the United States nor our partners are in a position to capture him before he carries out a plot, his citizenship should no more serve as a shield than a sniper shooting down on an innocent crowd should be protected from a SWAT team. That's who Anwar al-Awlaki was. He was continuously trying to kill people.
This guy, Edward Snowden, do you know anything about this guy? This guy shows up in a hotel in Hong Kong and he says, send up a videotape crew, and then he announces to the world that he has leaked the confidential National Security Agency memos and documents. He's compromised the security of the free world, and now he's gone. He checks out of the hotel in Hong Kong. He's gone. Where is this guy? He could be a hero. He could be a traitor. Where is Edward Snowden? Gosh, if only there were a way to keep track of people when they're... Here's the difference. When people's privacy is violated, it's illegal surveillance. I think we can all agree on that. When your privacy is violated, illegal surveillance. When people violate their own privacy, that's Facebook. That's a different thing altogether.
Now, I played them both back to back together because we're in the midst of this, you know. And before we get to some of the guests, we'll be calling in very shortly. I want to tell you, they have confidential, secret, and top secret clearances. I had a secret clearance. Now, if people, I don't know if everybody saw the MSNBC, we do use a lot of clips from MSNBC on here. They had this young lady who was a good friend of this guy Snowden when he was over in Europe, or I don't know where it was, Holland, someplace. And she worked in the embassy. She was a legal lawyer, and he was security IT person. Now, they both had top secret clearances. And she said, you know, he was getting so disenchanted for what he had to do when he was with the CIA, with NASA, with NSA. He was getting, and he didn't know what to do. And we used to talk. Well, she's an absolute liar. Now, I'm saying that if Snowden was with the NSA and she was with the CIA or NSA, and they were talking to one another, they are in two different fields. Even though they have top secret immunity, they are not allowed to talk about what each other does. That's a violation of major laws. It's probably about 32. In the government. So when she says he spoke to me about the different issues going on, she's either lying,
or they're violating the law.
Or they're violating the law. Now, if they were in private industry, like Booz and Holland, wherever it was, it's still a violation of the law.
Yeah.
But the problem is we got over 500,000 people out there in private industry with secret, confidential, and top secret clearances, which is absolutely mind-boggling. You cannot keep secrets with that many people knowing,
right,
unless it's compartmentalized.
Yeah, but that's, I don't think it'll even work then. I think that's part of the problem that we're fixing to experience, and part of the debate we should be having here. Now, I'm not worried about the faux outrage of, they exposed the system. Everybody's known.
They exposed no system.
It's been going on since
garbage.
We invented the electronics. But what they've done is they've, codified it in law, and now it's been the law for almost 12 years. And so nobody should be surprised and outraged and all this. But what I have – now, I'm not a fan of it at all. I'm not a fan of a universal spying by our government, but they're going to do it anyway. So – you might as well have safeties and oversight and things like that.
Right.
Have some laws in there. Because like you and I talked about this before, one of the problems with all of these corporations that do the same thing,
mm-hmm,
versus a government doing the same thing,
right,
is that the government will follow law and will protect the citizens' rights.
Right.
Because that's what it does. Whereas a company is out solely for profit. And they couldn't give an F about your rights.
Absolutely.
Companies all day long will sell your information or whatever else. If somebody gives them $5, they're like, here it is. That's what they do.
Well, what's the little thing down at the bottom of the screen when you go on these sites? They say, oh, we will sell your information.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that before. They have these disclaimers.
Right.
It's like anytime you join, Facebook, AOL, anywhere else, you're going to click on it, and it's got 50 pages of microprint.
Right.
And that's because it says, we're going to sell it to everybody that we ever know, and everybody they ever knew.
And everybody that hasn't been born yet.
Yeah, if somebody offers us a $5 bill on the street, we'll give them their
information. We'll give them the information.
But that's what that's about. Now, so there should be oversight. Now, that's one thing. The second thing about what you're talking about bothers me greatly, and this is one thing that I'm very upset about. That is the very recent creation of this super cyber, it's not just Cyber Command, which we created, which is an entire division of our military and government now,
right,
but it's the secret, agencies, not as in the NSA, CIA, but the secret agencies that were created under Bush and this whole Patriot Act,
right,
that are all these subcontracted BS. It's all private.
You mean like persons of interest?
That are security firms that are doing this. And they're the ones, when they were looking, I saw an article the other day, those guys have let out over 1 million top secret.
Absolutely.
That's BS. Because that's what they showed one guy where the agency or whatever it was, this little company that works, you know, it's like a Blackwater company, but all it does is spy and that kind of stuff, security stuff online. But they work for the government, private industry. But he's over like 85% or something of all his employees are top secret. Come on.
Well,
he's giving it to everybody.
And,
are you a janitor top
secret? But Booz Allen just got which he worked for, just got another contract for $5 billion. Now, there is no way anybody that this comes up, they need you to spend that. Maybe that big building in Utah is just to surveil all the private contractors.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's what they're needed for. Then you say, oh, well, what's all this? If it's working, if they're stopping plots, how come they did not get the people that blew up in Boston?
Right.
Well, and then you got this guy. Louis Gohmert,
mm-hmm.
This imbecile, Louis Gohmert, who tried to trip up our attorney general the other day.
What did he say?
Not the attorney general, the FBI director. He said, listen, you didn't stop the bombing in Boston. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. Now tell me, I got the paper right here. It says you knew about the two brothers. You knew about them a year ago, and you didn't do anything about it. What did you do? He said, well, let me explain. No, you're going to tell me. He said, no, are you calling me a liar? He says, why did you check out the Amman and the places of worship for them? You just let it go down. He says, we checked it out 18 months ago and spoke to the Imam four different times.
Yeah. Like,
so.
What are you talking about?
You are a liar.
Yeah.
So, you know, but this other thing is all propaganda. But when the cell phones first came out, remember Michael Douglas on the beach, Wall Street, he's pulling out this big phone that weighed 10 pounds and he's talking on the air. Well, where do you think those messages are going to? They're going in the air, and anybody with a daggone antenna can pick it up.
Yeah.
We do not own the air.
Right.
The air is free. So when they say they're intercepting, well, don't get on the telephone and don't get on your laptop computer, because you are the one that's helping push this industry along.
Yeah. Now, see,
my
problem.
Yeah, one more minute. We got a couple of people on the line.
But my problem with all of that is that the government should keep it to themselves. They should
right.
do it themselves and not farm it out. Because to me, it's the same problem we ran into in the Gulf War.
But why do you think they're doing
when
it?
We farm
no,
it?
I mean, break to the chase.
Money.
The reason is because we don't. When Reagan got in, he did this with the air traffic controllers. He killed them. He showed that you could get rid of them. You could contract them out. And what we have done since then, since the 1980s, we are contracting everything out except your false teeth.
Well, and that's the problem, though.
And that's the
that
problem.
Exactly
that's correct. Because we don't want to pay pensions. We don't want to pay hospitalization. We don't want to pay any of that.
Instead of building our own military bases
right.
with our own CVs
right.
and stuff, they had these groups do it. And that's why they killed people in
right.
the towers.
Right.
They
hooked me,
oh,
right.
does the electrical cord go here into the shower?
Oh, yeah. Does
it's so freaking stupid. But that's the same reason we got into trouble. All the scandals that destroyed our reputation overseas were all of this Blackwater type
right.
stuff where these yahoos that they hire for profit will go into villages and shoot up the whole village
mm-hmm.
instead of wearing a uniform with honor
right.
and doing the right thing. And the same thing here. There's going to be a scandal and something's going to go wrong because all these private companies that we've hired to spy on everybody
right.
are going to do the wrong thing.
Absolutely.
They're going to do something for profit or they're going to do something for revenge
right.
to get back at Bobby Joe that embarrassed them. And then it's going to be a national scandal.
Absolutely.
Because the government will be tied to it.
Okay, we have a couple of guests online. I'm glad they were patient enough. And who do I have on? Who's the first guest up? Who's this? Hello?
Pamela Hemphill.
Oh, I see you got to put your names in here. Pamela.
Pamela
okay.
Hemphill.
Yes.
Of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority.
Right.
Good afternoon.
And who's the other young lady?
Antoinette Cody, Charlotte Lundy Chapter, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated.
Right, Angela and
the
Pamela.
Delta Sigma Theta over here.
Right, absolutely. I am so glad. Well, you're going to have one more of your partners on, and I haven't seen them yet. They haven't been on. That is Desiree.
She will not be joining us this afternoon.
Oh, well, I spoke to her late last night, so.
That's all right.
I spoke to her late last night.
Pamela and Miss Antoine.
Yes. Now, that this is Delta Sigma Theta. And
that is great.
This organization has been around for 100 years. Started in January 1913 as a really a Christian public service organization. Is that correct?
That is
correct. And I think, now let's see, of the two of you, I'm looking at my thing here. Now, Pamela, you are the chair for the Centennial event. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
And you
we
have been, and I guess,
Internet.
Yeah, right, and Antoinette, you're the co-chair.
That is correct.
And you guys have been on a marathon this year, haven't you?
Yes,
oh,
we have.
Yes, we have. We actually started in a year ago, actually, in June of 2012, planning the Centennial Torch Tour Charlotte for Delta Sigma Theta. Of course, you, as you said, January 13, 1913, we actually began our sisterhood of 22 wonderful college women. And today, we have over 200,000 of us in the United States and abroad.
Oh, wow. You know, one thing I need to ask, I need to get this out of the way. On a 19-city tour, how do you bring enough shoes along?
Well, it's actually 22 cities.
22 cities, I'm sorry, right. How do you bring enough shoes along? Because I know when my wife packs, I mean, forget it. You know, I'm relegated to a handheld.
Well, we're not going to 22 cities. We're just inviting people to choose the cities that they want to visit. So
okay,
we're
so
not doing... So it's going to be Centennial Torch is visiting 22 cities, but each city is having its own Centennial Tour celebration and observance.
Yeah, we started in January at the Rose Bowl Parade in California, in Pasadena,
right.
California, and we have gone since then to many cities in the United States, as well as recently the South Atlantic region, of which we are a part of, Bermuda, and then from Bermuda to Greensboro. And now we are looking forward to next weekend, it coming to Charlotte. So the Torch actually does the traveling. And we have had some women, some of our members, that have gone pretty much to every site. So, yes,
well,
we have put on our shoes.
Well, I see here, I mean, Los Angeles in January, New Orleans in January, Tokyo in January, Seattle, Washington in January, Denver, Colorado in February, and St. Louis in February, Oklahoma in February, Dallas in February, Washington, D.C. in March, Little Rock, Arkansas in March, and Chicago in March, Cleveland in April, Mobile and Atlanta all in March, and Augusta and Tampa in May, and Bermuda, as you just said, in Greensboro in June, and now Charlotte, and then New York is going in June. So
we will pass the torch to New York.
How many miles has that torch run been passed from? You know? Does anybody know?
Right offhand, I cannot tell you, but I can truly say that it has gone millions of miles, seriously.
Tokyo,
it has
Japan.
Gone over a million miles.
Now,
hey, despite the humor of the shoes and all that. Real quick, for our listeners who may not be aware, could you give me an overview of exactly what Delta Sigma Theta was founded for and what it stands for today?
Sure. Delta Sigma Theta is a service organization, and again, 22 collegiate women on the college campus of Howard University in Washington, D.C., founded the service organization. They felt that there was a void in the things that they were doing on the college campus, and that they needed to be about service rather and sisterhood. And so they decided that they would become a part of the Women's Suffrage March. It was the first public service participation that our sorority participated in. At that time, of course, in 1913, it was not heard of that black women would be able to participate. So they actually marched in the rear of the parade so that they could take a stand for women as well. So that was the first public service act. Since then, we have been about nationally with educational development, health services, political awareness and involvement. Economic development. And so these are the things that we really emphasize in international awareness as well.
Can I say something locally?
Because Pam spoke on our national organization, but now we get our guidelines from our national organization. As she said before, we have some programs that the national organization is responsible for overseeing, but locally we take those thrusts. And in Charlotte, what we have done is we were founded in 1942, and from there we have one of the biggest of our programming is the Cotillion. We've sponsored a Cotillion. We give scholarships. We have mentoring programs for girls and boys. We just do a lot of public service types of activities throughout Charlotte. So for 70 years, we have done things locally to make an impact in the community.
And that is why we actually decided that we would start our centennial celebration with a team lift. So we are actually going to, with proud sponsors, of course, we are going to be able to have a STEMS team lift on the campus of UNC Charlotte and Johnson C. Smith University. And in between that, they will be able to visit the Delta Center. We actually have a facility on Batesford Road. And so these young ladies, 175 from the ages of 14 to 18 years old, will be able to experience science, technology, engineering, and mathematics workshops and career opportunities in those areas. We encourage our youth to, you know, for high academics and to pursue degrees. And as Cody said, we encourage them to participate with our May Week, which we work with eighth graders in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, all of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, and award them for their academics and services in the schools. And we also work with other organizations. We team with other organizations such as Delta the Charlotte Foundation, who actually help us to do a lot of the services that we do render.
Okay. So our listening audience can understand, before each one of you speak, just say your name first so we know who's talking, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Right. Now, you mentioned something that I wanted to get to, but what you were saying, I didn't want to interrupt it. You were part of the women's suffrage march and group and envision.
That's correct.
Envision. How did you get involved in?
Well, Delta women have always, when they founded Delta Sigma Theta, they came on with aggression to help better women in all areas. And when they found out what the women were doing, such as Mrs. Boner and other women that were doing things to help women with the right to vote and with the right to be head of their households or to be able to buy land and this type of thing. They decided that, hey, we're going to be a part of that. That's what we want to do. We want to be a part. So they, too, became a part of the Women's Suffrage March and actually marched down Pennsylvania Avenue. We reenacted that march in March of this year as a sorority, and we had women from all over, all races, that marched with us.
How did we're talking about 1922 now? How was the racial divide, or just women say, "Hey, we got to stick together. I don't care, you know, if you're from Mars or from Louisiana." How was that worked out?
Well, of course, this is Pamela. Of course, during that time, you know that there was a lot of separateness, so they marched in the back because of the belief.
Okay.
They marched in the back of the line so that they could march.
Okay, but you were welcome to march with them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. I mean, that's amazing, because that is not something that I have heard about at all, that there were black women involved in the women's suffrage movement.
How about that? That's Pamela. You're exactly right. But it did happen, and we have evidence of it, and we're very proud to know that that is the first service part of our sorority.
Right.
Service
Act. Way to kick it off, right? That's right, way to kick it off. How did the organization get founded here in Charlotte, Mecklenburg?
In Charlotte, there were a group of women and who were already Deltas, and generally when a new chapter is founded, there are some women in the area who get together and they have like-mindedness, and they decided that they wanted to form a local organization, and that is pretty much how it has spread throughout the United States and abroad, just because they have those same like ideals. And, of course, service is at the forefront of everything that we do, and they wanted to get together, and it was about 9 ladies, and then they have to have at least 12. And from 12 women in Charlotte, we have approximately almost 700 members locally in our chapter.
Okay, did you have a chapter in South Carolina anywhere?
This is Camp Hill. Yes, we have chapters in South Carolina. In fact, we are broken up into 7 regions, and North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, and Bermuda actually make up the South Atlantic region. We have a director for the region, and our director is Andrea Jeffries. And then we have a collegiate member that actually is over the collegiates in the area, and that is Siobhan Johnson. So we do, and we have that in every region, and then we have our local chapters. And in every region, we expect it to give to the community, to render services in all the areas.
And the reason why I was asking is because that I was noticing that I didn't see the torch going through there or going through Arizona. And I was just wondering if that is Arizona part, that would be part of the western region probably, I guess, huh?
It is. Let me explain to this. This is Pamela, and I'm the chair. And, the way that the 22 cities were chosen, basically if a founder, one of our founding 22 members lived in a city, whatever city they were from, that city was chosen as one of the cities. And there were several from the same, national president. We have, and then we have our executive committee. Our executive committee, national committee, consists of the national president, the national first vice president, the national second vice president, who is a collegiate member, our national secretary, and a national treasurer. Those are the executive committee for the national organization. And all of those 5 cities were chosen because Charlotte has been we're so unique. We were fortunate to have a past national president, who is Dr. Bertha Maxwell Roddy. She was the 20th national president, and we have current national treasurer, who is Terry Rivalte Prunty, who is a CPA and resides here in Charlotte and works at one of the local banks.
Antoinette, how was the organization founded here? How did you go about creating the organization? Well, I guess I would go to how you created an organization any other city.
Well, as I said before, in 1942, you have a group of ladies who are already Deltas, and this, again, this is Antoinette, and usually they kind of meet and they find each other, and they just decide that they want to get it to begin a local chapter, and sometimes that happens because of the location. If the closest chapter to belong to, let's say, is in Greensboro, and you don't want to travel all the way to Greensboro just to be affiliated with Delta, you will try to have a chapter that's closer to you. And because Charlotte is large, these ladies came together and they started the chapter, again, because of the service that we do and the ideals of Delta Sigma Theta. And locally, we have, in the Charlotte area, we have a chapter in Gastonia. Just if you look at the perimeter of Charlotte, Rock Hill, Salisbury, Union County has a newly formed chapter. But Charlotte is like, if you think about how large Charlotte is and all of the all of the universities and colleges that are located in this area, we have a large, we have just a large roster of Soros. So,
well, I have a question before, I have another question for you before Thomas comes on. I know, I just became the president of the North Carolina Black Leadership Caucus here in Charlotte, Mecklenburg. We used to be a organization that was statewide that only had congressional districts, some of the congressional districts, as affiliates, as organization affiliates. So, but then it was later changed where we now could form in counties to get more people involved. And we call ourselves, and I just became the chair, we just formed it, and it's Charlotte-Mecklenburg. Now, if someone, which takes in all of Mecklenburg County, so if someone wanted to join the Deltas, and because it says Charlotte, and they said they lived in Huntersville, are they prohibited, or can they join? And because the Charlotte is just a word, and you mean the whole county.
This is Pamela. Can join if they live in Mecklenburg at this time, because there's not another chapter in Mecklenburg except the Charlotte Alumni chapter. That is why we are at 700, so pretty close to 700. And yes, they can join. They would actually need to go on our website and find out the information as to what they need to do. But keeping in mind, if they don't have service at heart, then it would probably not be of interest, because we are hardworking women in the community.
And let me just add, this is Antoinette, let me just add, if that is in reference to someone who is not a Delta and wants to join, but if you are a Delta, you can choose to join any chapter that you'd like to join. You can join Charlotte, you can join, you know, surrounding areas. It's totally up to you. But if you are a Delta, you can certainly become a part of Charlotte. It doesn't matter.
And since we're talking, this is Pamela, since we're talking about other chapters, I would like to say that we are not a selfish chapter, because of the magnitude of what we are attempting to do for the celebration in Charlotte. We invited several of the surrounding chapters in North Carolina and South Carolina to help. And we have several chapters that actually have been helping. Union County, Concord Alumni, Florence, South Carolina Alumni, Gastonia Alumni, Shelby Alumni, Union County Alumni, Rock Hill Alumni, Summersville Alumni. So we have several chapters that have actually come on board, Lancaster Alumni, to say, you know what, we want to be a part of this great thing. And so we are just looking forward to next Saturday morning. We're having an honors breakfast Saturday afternoon in downtown Charlotte. We are having a parade that starts at noon. We will have vendors as well, but we will have a parade honoring our grand marshal will be the mayor pro tem, of course, because our mayor will just wishing him blessings upon his confirmation. But the mayor pro tem will lead the parade, and then our honorees will be there, as well as our grand sponsors and a lot of chapters throughout North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. And we also have some national leaders that will be in town as well as a part of the parade. Immediately after the parade, in front of the Wells Fargo atrium, we will actually have the lighting of the torch and the dedication. And then after that, we'll have a little break, and then we're going to have this grand gala at the Harvey Gantt Center, of which Dr. Roddy was a part of the birth of that, because it's formerly the Afro-American Culture Center. So we are just excited about next weekend. We have been excited since January 1, when we started the celebration, and we're just going to continue. We will pass the torch to New York, and then New York, of course, will you can look at the map if you go online for www.deltasigma theta sorority, Inc., and so that you can see where the torch is going. We will end next month in D.C., Washington, D.C., where we started.
Well, I have a caller that might want to speak to you. Let's see. Hello, caller. Are you listening? No, I guess the caller's gone. Okay. But anyway, what I now some of the things that I want to know about what you do. Do you also get since you're involved in a lot of the schools? Are young people out to vote, get their registered?
Yes, we have kids voting. This is one of the programs that we do have. And on election day, we have several locations where the SORARs are with the children as they man kids voting. And in addition to kids voting, we have what we call the Delta Academy, Delta Gyms, and the Embody program. All three of these are mentoring programs for middle school and high school age youth, and they meet regularly throughout the sorority or throughout the year. And they are to build their self-esteem, to take them on trips when necessary, and to just meet with them and show them that, you know, there's some things that they need to know about. They have various workshops on money, finance. They also, you know, have career opportunities, workshops, and awareness. So they do quite a bit with that. And then, as Pam mentioned earlier, one of the other things that we just had recently was a May Week program. And the May Week program recognizes high-achieving academically or athletically or artistically 8th grade students throughout Charlotte-Mecklenburg, and we had a program at West Charlotte High School where these students were recognized, and they all received a little award. Their parents were there, and it was just a very proud moment. At that time, also, we recognized students who had received scholarships, and this year we were able to start a new scholarship, which is called named in honor of Bertha Maxwell Roddy. We called it the Bertha Maxwell Roddy Centennial Scholarship. And this is the first year that we were able to award a four-year scholarship, which is approximately $5,000 a year, to one student. And in addition to that student, other students were receiving scholarships as well. So this year we gave out quite a bit of scholarship money, and that is just strictly scholarship. And from the cotillion, we had students who participated, senior girls who were recognized at our annual cotillion. And from the cotillion, they also were able to receive award money.
Well, so that 4-year scholarship was to a young student here in Charlotte.
Yes.
Very good.
From East Mecklenburg High School.
This is Pamela Hemphill. The scholarships, we have others. We didn't just give that one. We actually have a Selena Johnson scholarship for students as well, and I think it was for two, a male and a female. We actually gave a scholarship for the very first time to a male student, and he received $2,500, and we hope to increase it over the years, but we reached for his academic progress. So we're not only reaching out to just females, but we are reaching out to young men. We have a program called Embody. We work along with other men organizations and fraternities to work with young men in the city because they, too, sometimes need that support from women. So we are trying to help and make sure that they are secured. And I want to say another thing in reference to what we do with the social action piece. We were actually participating with voters registration. In the process, we don't endorse anyone. We endorse those who are working for the same causes that we, and we don't really endorse. We just work for those for people who try to. So we encourage all of them. We invite people to come for forums. And so we had a forum we've had forums with other organizations. We've had forums alone. And every time there's general a large election, we try to have a forum to keep people educated about the issues and so that they will know. And during that time, we actually register voters. It doesn't matter what party they register under, as long as they exercise their right to vote.
Well, you know, and the thing is that I say it all the time, you know, you get the government that you vote for. And when you don't vote, you get the government that you didn't vote for.
That's
so,
right.
You know, the problem here is that people say, that doesn't affect me. But, you know, forget the president of the United States or the vice president or the attorney general. The people that affect us every single day are our local judges, our local sheriffs, our local mayors, our local city council, our local county commissioners. They affect our lifestyle every single day we breathe.
You're right.
And if people don't understand, they got just what they got.
You are exactly right. One of the things that I want to say that we invited a lot of our elected officials to participate in various areas of our program. And, of course, I know you are going to attend, so you will see, you know, who responds to the people. And, you know, we really wanted to see a variety of our elected officials. We're not going to see those participants because they have not responded whether they will participate. But we do have Senator Kay Hagan has responded that she will be there. Mel Watt, if possible, or representative, because he too is going through confirmation. And so we will have Joel Ford there. We will have Rodney Moore. We, of course, our Mayor Pro Tem and Mayfield. We will, and a few others, but I'm just naming a few, but you can tell what
Have you gotten in touch with Malcolm Graham?
Malcolm Graham will be there.
Good. Very good. Because if they don't come, I will call them out on this show. Now,
get a response from Tim Tillis saying that he had a prior engagement.
Yeah, well, that's all right for him. You know, you're not missing much. Tim Tillis not there. But the rest of them, I will call them out if they ain't there. Mr. Patrick Cannon, I know you're going to be there.
He is our Grand Marshal. He is definitely going to be there. He's going to be pretty much a part of our. He's been very supportive of Delta Sigma Theta, so we and Mayor Fox as well. So we are just very pleased to have Mr. Cannon, the Honorable Patrick Cannon, to be a part of it.
You need to tell us the date because, see, I'm scheduled to be out of town. And what date is this?
Next Saturday. Friday night is a closed event, but next Saturday we will have all day. We will be celebrating in downtown Charlotte. We will be at John C. Smith on Saturday morning for breakfast. It is a subscription, and it is closed. We have sold every ticket that we could possibly get. And but we do have some gala tickets still available. If they go online to charlottedst.org, we do have some, and that will be at the Harvey Gantt Center later on that night at 7 o'clock. But we will have the parade downtown Charlotte, which starts at 12. And, of course, people will start lining up before this because we plan to start on time. And then immediately after that, we will have the torch lighting and ceremony in front of the atrium of the Wells Fargo building.
I'm definitely going to try to get there. I have been confined to the hospital, obviously the hospital, to my house because I've had, since February, I've had a bad sciatica. I've been getting lumbar shots and I'm getting lumbar epidurals. And so I have not been out walking around or even driving, only three times about since February 15th. So I am definitely going to try to be there. When is the breakfast now? The breakfast, say that again.
The breakfast is Saturday morning at 8 o'clock at Johnson C. Smith. But I would like for you to definitely come to our reception, and I will talk with you offline about that.
All right, very good. Give us a complete schedule of how it's going to go from from January 21st on.
You mean what we have done?
What's the schedule of events?
For next weekend?
Yes.
I'll do that, Pam. Friday. Okay, Friday, June the 21st, from 9 a.m. to 4:30, we will have a team lift program. And this event is closed. The young ladies will be going to Johnson C. Smith and UNCC. That's Friday, June the 21st.
Now, what does the team lift program consist of?
The team lift consists of young ladies who are going to have workshops pertaining to science, technology, engineering, and math. And they will be going to, first of all, to UNCC. There will be some instructors and presentations or presenters doing workshops with them. One of the workshops will be about Henrietta Lacks, who, if some of you know, you've heard about Henrietta Lacks and the, who had cancer. And from the cancer, we have a lot of, let me see if I can get it right. So Henrietta Lacks is known for her cells, the cell that was spread, and a lot of people have studied from that. So, again, there will be a workshop pertaining to that. And the girls will go from there to the Delta facility for lunch and afterwards go to Johnson C. Smith. Again, science, engineering, math, and technology. They will also have some workshops pertaining to finance.
Right.
And Friday night, we will have a reception, and the community leaders, members from various chapters will be invited, sponsors, our board members, our committee members are all going to be at Johnson C. Smith. And national officers. On Saturday, from 8 a.m. until 10 a.m., the honorees, who are our national treasurer, Taylor Rivalti Fronte, CPA, and Bertha Maxwell Roddy, will be honored at the breakfast at 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. And at this time, it is a prayer breakfast. There will be some ministers there, of course, to pray, and some special invited guests who are going to speak on behalf of the two honorees. From the breakfast, we will go to the parade. The parade is scheduled to begin at 12 p.m. at 9th and Tryon Streets uptown. It will go from 9th Street and end at 3rd Street. once we get to the end of the parade, we will walk over to the Wells Fargo atrium, where we will have the torch lighting ceremony. That will be a ceremony that will last about 30 to 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, during this time, vendors will be on Tryon Street on the outside. This is all day. This is from about 8 o'clock to 6 p.m. on Saturday. And we will also have vendors at the Courtyard Marriott Friday night from 12 to 6 p.m. And then finally, on Saturday, the gala at the Harvey B. Gantt Center will begin at 7 p.m. and it should end at 11.
Okay, very good. And that's open to the public?
It is. Yes, that is open to the public. All the events are open to the public except the closed event for the teams.
Right, okay, closed events for the teams. Now, how many sorrows, I guess you call them, how many altogether are there with the Deltas?
We have 690 something, but in throughout the world we have over 200,000. And when you touch one Delta, you're talking family. So we have numbers. If we are 700 active now, we in Charlotte, we probably have pretty close to 2,000. But some are just because Charlotte is kind of transit. People don't realize that. Some will come to meetings and will be active, but they're not on our road. They may be somewhere else, you know.
Right.
So we have actively involved around 700.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking about that 200,000. What is wrong? And that's what I don't understand. I can't understand some of these regressive party members, Republicans. Don't they know that women rule this planet? I mean, I don't understand that. This must be brain dead to even push through anything that would affect a woman. I don't understand that. I for the life of me, you know, and I want to tell you something. That's true. My mother was the smartest person I ever knew, even to present day. And she's been dead since 97. So, if they keep saying that if women were more involved in the government, we wouldn't be as screwed up as we are today.
I agree, but that's a personal. That's not a Delta comment. This is Pamela. That I agree with you. I also agree that women do rule, and women will probably rule the United States in the next election. Okay,
yeah.
So that's all.
Yeah.
That's a personal note there.
I certainly could think that. Now, what I see you're going to be ending in the National Convention in Washington D.C. on July 11th to the 17th. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That is,
is when the torch will be passed to the national president, signifying the beginning of our 51st national convention, where we will be meeting with about 45,000 women.
My gosh.
So we're going to shut D.C. down, right?
So D.C., be prepared, because here we come.
Thomas said this all evolved from 22 women. Has the new national chairperson or president been chosen already?
She will be chosen at the convention. This is the end of her time, and the new president will be elected at our 51st national convention. And that is why when we always elect new presidents at our national convention.
Uh-huh.
This is Pamela. I have the privilege of serving on the National Nominating Committee, so we expect to have one it's a high calling always for Delta's national president, but we will have another grand president. Cynthia Butler McIntyre is our current national president, and she will pass the torch to our new. So it will be very well qualified, just president stepping into her shoes.
Now, I know women do not like to discuss their ages, but does that come into, does an age of a person who's running come into your decision-making in making or nominating the next woman to run your organization? Because, I mean, there's a lot of young people out there that have fabulous ideas, but, hey, you know, because I ran into that when I ran for the president of the NAACP here in Charlotte. So has that ever been considered, or is that a problem?
It is not, Pamela. The main thing is that they are ages not matter. They do have to be qualified, and we have certain qualifications that we have within our sorority. And if they meet those qualifications, age does not matter. If they meet the qualifications and the body elects them, it is an elected position. So is our national president and our executive committee are all elected positions.
Let me just add that also, when we start considering electing individuals for our national offices, we have an opportunity to look at their background, and we see a lot of their experience. So they're not just all of a sudden deciding that this is something that they want to do. For the most part, they have a lot of experience on paper, and not just on paper, but they have done a lot of work in the sorority that will allow them to move to that position. And most people are aware of the work that they have done before they even get to that point.
Well, you know, I am so glad to hear that, because, you see, that's how it should be in politics.
Yes.
But not because, every Tom, Dick, and Harry thinks they can be president or mayor or the head Indian chief. And, you know, just because they jumped out the front door and said, look at me, I'm here. I mean, you need some sort of experience. Now, there are occasions when someone may not have all the technical experience, but does have a breadth of knowledge, understanding, and insight that a lot of people don't have that might make a difference. But I think you guys have an organization that is, I mean, and they keep saying, women fight. Oh, man, women fight among themselves. They run their mouths and door. And listen, I mean, for you all to have an organization for 100 years.
Well, one of the things that I do want to say, this is Pamela again, we represent our youth. Because on our national as well as our local, we try to have a mixture of ages. With our national organization, we do have the second vice president is a collegiate. It is always an elected college student. So we have a college student there to represent the youth. And she, along with all of the regional representatives from the seven regions, are college representatives. So we still have a mixture, and they have some of the same rights and privileges as the others, as those who are seasoned Deltas.
Here's a question that I've been dying to ask ever since we started this discussion of politics, because this is a political show, so I have to ask. I'm really, really amazed and excited by how much y'all do and how strongly you began with something. This is absolutely vital. We talk about voting all the time on the show. It's one of the, it is the major tenet of all democracy. If you don't vote, you don't have one. But given all of that, there's a long, well, last couple of decades of fighting back by certain groups in America, this hard pushback against all of the positive steps the country's made ever since civil rights. We've continually fought forward, and yet there's a strong segment of society that wants to push back. And I was wondering if y'all ever feel any pressure or any just kind of, you know, want to almost give up, throw in the towel at certain segments of society. You know, there's recently near us in South Carolina a boycott of the NAACP called just because of their policies. But do y'all ever want to use your muscles that way instead of going in despite the odds and just doing, you know, doing your work as usual? Do you ever just want to say, hey, we're going to pull a chapter out, or we're going to boycott your, you know, locality, your county?
Yes, this is Pamela. I had the privilege of serving on the Social Action, National Social Action Commission, and we did boycott South Carolina. We chose not to for years because of the flag situation. Not to have any of our meetings or regional conferences in the state of South Carolina. We recently, after they did move the flag and we talked and had a discussion at the table, we believe in trying to be peaceful about situations and going and talk. We have in every state pretty much, we actually go to have Delta Days at the state capitol, and we go and talk with the legislators about the issues that we truly believe in. Most recently in North Carolina, we actually, as of last May, decided that we would bring on board other women organizations to come and at the table, and rather than have Delta Days at the table, we decided that we would have a gathering. And the gathering consisted of the Lynx, along with the Deltas, the Zeta Phi Beta, Sigma Gamma Rho, and some the Women Negro Council. So we went to Raleigh and spoke with legislators about the issues that we were faced here in North Carolina. The Deltas in South Carolina have done the same thing, as well as Virginia, who's always, Virginia has been a very force in getting rights for those individuals who have been released from prison and can't get anything done, yet they serve their time. So we definitely take on issues. We don't, you know, as I said.
What about Arizona? Because Arizona was the last state in the union to have a Martin Luther King Day.
Right, correct. They definitely, the Deltas there actually went on board to help in that area as well. Oh, yeah, we definitely will let our numbers be known with the issues and things at hand. We do want the Obamacare to continue to be passed and to continue because it has helped so many people that would not be here today had it not been for the Obamacare. So there are a lot of issues, the economic situation as well. We really want to see our individuals, regardless of race or color. We want to see more individuals with jobs. We want to see, and there are jobs that they can be, and things are getting better, but they are not where they need to be, by no means. Right. And we're not satisfied. So, yes, we will continue to go and be at the table to talk.
Well, ladies, last for your time, but I want to give each one of you about 5 minutes to, a bit less, to tie up how each one of you feel about what where you started out a year ago and where you're at right now and how you feel everything is going. So, Pamela, why don't you go first?
All right. I think a year ago when I was asked to chair this, I said, oh, no, you have got to be kidding me. I do all of this in a year, plan this celebration, and but Charlotte is such a welcoming committee. As I said, we have corporate sponsors that came on board. We have large chapters, surrounding chapters that came on board, as well as the support of our regional director and regional representative, our president, Desiree Rue, who could not be with us on the call. So we have truly had the support of the chapter members and friends to pull together and say, we're going to celebrate because you all have worked so hard in the community. We want to see this happen. And so when I look at the way things are so close, a week away, we will at this time be hopefully taking a break, getting ready for our gala. This time next week, we'll have finished our team lift on Friday, our reception on Friday night. We will have finished our breakfast and our parade and our dedication. So this is, we are just looking and excited about it, and we want everyone to come out and join us in downtown Charlotte next week, celebrating 100 years of service. That's a big milestone. Celebrating Terry Franti, who is the CPA and the national treasurer, Dr. Bertha Roddy, who was my collegiate advisor as the 20th national president at UNC. She was at UNCC when she started when I started in Delta. And so I want to say that, you know, these two fine young women are deserving. And our national president, we just salute her, look forward to her presence as well. So we just salute Delta Sigma Theta and the Sorors.
Okay, Antoinette?
Okay, first of all, I would like to thank our president, Desiree Rue, for allowing me to co-chair, and thank Pam for her leadership as the co-chair. Thank Allison Jones-Young, who is the custodian, and the custodian's job was to look after the torch. And to thank the Sorors who have met on a regular basis. I was sending out maybe 160 emails for our meetings, and we've had over 200 people to come to the meetings and to just roll up their sleeves and get involved with this process. It's been about a year, and we just want to thank those who have had an opportunity to come out and just decide that this is what we want to do and have worked diligently to that end. And again, for all the involvement, and I'm just excited about what we're going to see come to fruition next week, and to thank our two honorees who are the reason that we're doing it in the first place, and just to be thankful that it's coming to an end.
Okay, I got one more question for you, Antoinette. Where is the torch physically right now?
Physically, our custodians is responsible for the torch. And so she has that, and I can't tell you where she has it. But the custodian is keeping up with the torch.
I can tell you that she is an engineer. We had to, the torch custodian had to be an engineer, and she's an engineer with Duke Energy.
You mean it's buried, huh? If you tell me you have to kill me, huh?
No. We don't want anyone to try to get to our torch.
No.
I have one question left for both of you. What do you think is going to happen in Scandal next year?
I can tell you, Pamela, I do not watch it. So, Antoinette, that is for you.
Everybody watches Scandal. I can't remember where it left off, but it's going to be interesting. It has been interesting to this point, and I'm sure it's
going to
continue to be interesting.
Oh, my gosh. I got threatening letters from people that I turned on to the show. They said, why did you turn me on to this show? I can't stop watching it. I have to watch the
Yeah, it is an interesting show.
Well, I would like to say thank you for allowing us to come on, and I want to thank my co-chair, who is my right arm, and she is – she's always there for me, and we are a team, and those individuals have just, like she said, rolled up their sleeves, and we are just ready to serve the community next week.
And just to add to that, just so you'll know that Pam and I both are former presidents of the Charlotte Alumni Chapter, and I am the immediate past president of the Charlotte Alumni Chapter. So when we talk about leadership earlier, there are so many people in our chapter who have assumed leadership roles, and they continue to grow and do things for Delta.
Well, all I need to say is I want to tell you, you get this many women together, I'm telling you, we men are in trouble because we all have it together. And for 100 years, I mean, I don't, there's very few organizations that have been together 100 years. I mean, you know, the United States has only been together since 1776. So, you know, yeah, you guys have been doing a hell of a job, and I wish you all the best. And I'm hoping I'm going to be permitted to run out, because I've been confined to the house since my sciatica, and the doctor wants me to rest. And I was walking with a walker for 2 weeks here, so I just got rid of that. So I got a cold, so I don't know. But I want to, and I need to tell you that Mary Jones is our choir leader on Saturday.
Before we leave, I don't know if you are aware, but the Shaw Alumni Chapter is the reason that we have the Black Women's Caucus. It was an idea from the Shaw Alumni Chapter. During the administration, or right after Dr. Roddy was president of the Charlotte chapter, and these women actually formed a group, the Social Action Committee, became the Black Women's Caucus.
Oh, that is fabulous.
Wow.
That is fabulous. Well, I hope I'm not worse than I am today, because I'll go to church tomorrow and talk to Mary, and I hope she's listening. She said she was going to try to, so. But I want to thank both of you, Pamela and Anthony.
Thank you.
You guys are doing a fabulous job. And I want you back on the show after the 21st, it'll be the 28th. I want you to tell me what happened, how it happened, everything else. And then, you all going to the convention?
We're
going in July, yes, indeed.
I'll be at the convention. No, I'll be in Mexico. Can't go. Because I was going to say I'd like to go there and record it. Do it live from the, and record it from Washington, D.C.
We would love for you to. Well, maybe you can send someone.
Well, hey, Thomas, my producer here. But when is your next meeting in Charlotte for the regular Delta meeting in Charlotte?
We meet the second Saturday morning of the month, but we will not meet until September.
Okay. Well, please
send me. The second Saturday morning at the Delta Center at 10:30.
Okay. You send me an email. So that's going to be when, in July?
September. We meet in September.
Okay. Send me an email.
We don't meet in the summer because we have conferences and conventions.
Okay. So send me an email so I know. And I'm going to try to make it to that, and I'll give you a call if I can make it. But send me an email with all the information on that, where it's at and everything else, okay?
Also,
we'll get that to our president. Thank you. Thanks again.
Well, thank you again for the opportunity to be on the show.
Hold on a minute.
Oh, I just want to repeat real quick. I got this one earlier, but I didn't get the national one. But the local website is charlottedsp.org, and then the national website.
www.deltasigmatheta.org.
Okay, so anybody can follow along and find out information.
Okay.
Oh, yes, there's a lot of information on the website, and it takes you through the history, the programs, the region, just about any information, and it's public information. There's public information that you can read about.
Okay, thank you, Pamela. And I'll be talking to you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, who do you have here? Who's on the, they're going to, okay, good. So, hey, that was great, huh?
Yeah, Miss Pamela and Miss Antoinette, love talking to them, but I liked finding out so much about their history and what they've done, starting with just 22 young ladies, but talk about starting strong. With the suffragette movement in the early 1900s, that's pretty amazing.
Yes, Pamela Hart Hemphill. Excuse me, Pamela Hart Hemphill, I should say, and Antoinette Cody, both Charlotte residents and both past presidents.
Right.
So, people, that's right.
But
it's a big thing. Next weekend.
A little bit of service goes a long way.
Oh man, I'm telling you. Speaking about a little bit of service going a long way.
Yeah, I got more
horrible news that just came through.
What's that?
On that spying scandal.
Oh, we're going to get that in a minute here.
Just shocked, man. Shocked.
Well, yeah, just listen to this. Well, Letterman, he has been going nuts, but this
isn't
what he said.
And I've never said this before about a politician, especially a mayor of New York City. I think the guy running the city, Mayor Bloomberg, I think this guy's a genius. He has turned this town into a wonderland. You know what I'm talking about? You know the potholes all over New York City?
Yes, yes.
Some of them are enormous. I mean, there's one on 8th Avenue, actually has a gift shop at the bottom. And it's huge. You can rent a mule to take you to the bottom. And a couple of years ago, Simon and Garfunkel had a reunion concert in a pothole.
In one of the potholes.
Right. Well, that's the wait a minute. This year, the mayor has stocked them all with trout.
I'm telling you. What can I tell you?
We could invest a little in infrastructure and go a long way.
Right? You think infrastructure? What's that? Well, what's that? Oh, before you, what you say that we're going to talk about that NSA here, but hey, Wingnuts.
Yes.
Trent Franks.
Whoa.
Wingnut.
What?
Arizona.
Whatever. Yeah.
I'm not even going to call him a representative because he's just Wingnut. And here, when are these guys going to learn? This man ventured into the realm of Disney World again by stating that rape and pregnancy do not go together.
Right. But
saying
for a while, though, they keep claiming that you have this magical, mystical property that you only get pregnant.
No, that wasn't him. That was the other Wingnut.
Yeah. But
this
is what I'm saying. It's floating around in Wingnut territory.
That's this guy said at a committee hearing that the incidences of pregnancy and rape are very low.
Right.
Very, very low. So remember, that is not going to happen to anybody. If you were raped, don't worry about it, because there's such things as magic shields.
Yes, magic god shields or fairy dust or something.
That's right.
I kind of like those shields that came out with in South Africa. You know, the ones that the women can insert and they're lined with barbs all the way down. Now, they're shields you can count on.
What, is it trying to catch anything?
Well, these guys, look, they've been for a while now. They live in fantasy world where they denigrate women. They think women are, you know, second class, you know, because women
they
are real.
Think women are second class?
Yeah, they think
only think.
They walk around and they have no rights and they can't work and they can't think. And they just need to sit at home and have babies. And in their world, no one can have a baby. Unless they are in a marriage, because no one would have sex outside of a marriage. And so the whole dream is that if we could just ban everything, then everything would be good. You know, there would never be another out-of-wedlock pregnancy.
Except if you have a wide stance.
Yeah, right. You know, so it's just, it's not real. And the insulting part is when they're theocratic BS interferes with the reality of science and medicine. And so keep letting their desires to have a biblically pure world interfere with reality.
But
it shouldn't be that way. So rape, it isn't the woman's fault. It isn't what she wore. You know, it wasn't the fact that she was hanging out at a club where alcohol was sold or any of these factors. You know, it's about
they were in the kitchen, and they were, and a guy jumped through the window and raped her.
Well, it doesn't matter how it happens. It's a crime, and there can be results. And this whole thing about no, if you don't want to get pregnant.
What are you trying to be technical? You talking about science?
No.
We know that's a fake. Science is a mirage.
like contraception and you know, they can even take care of things after the fact with pills and or abortions. They have all kinds of things that actually work rather than pray away. You know, like they pray away the gay.
Pray away the gay. Okay. Well, just listen to this. This is Frank.
Before, when my friends on the left side of the aisle here try to make rape and incest the subject, because the incidence of rape and resulting in pregnancy are very low, but
these guys, it's just insane. It is insane. It's not insane. It's insidious. It's insidious.
But the problem is they keep doing it over and over and over. Look, they just, you know, Kansas just stepped back in the 19th century. I think Wyoming is going backwards. They're all, you know, they're passing legislation. This has been one of the worst years ever with local legislation against women and against rape and against.
As Jack Palance says, it ain't over yet.
I mean, they're destroying all the states. Rights everywhere to provide any kind of care for women, whether it's just sex education or you know, medical care.
Well, you see, but they're doing this because they know deep inside they will not win another national election, and it's only going to be 15 years more when they won't win any election.
Right.
They won't win any election.
And by that, we mean
maybe just regionally, but even regionally, they're losing. Texas, in 50 years, is going to be Democratic. It's going to be blue. Yeah. And just to reiterate that, let me, which we people didn't hear before because I didn't have the microphone on, I want to play you what Ann, I believe I haven't had dinner, Coulter said.
He is Jack of Workings of the Republican Party, like Kelly Ayotte, whom I hope gets a primary opponent, and Marco Rubio, whom I hope gets a primary opponent, and the rest of them, they're going to pass an amnesty bill. If the House passes anything concerning immigration, and this is very important, Hannity viewers, so pay attention here, the House passes nothing but, say, enforce E-Verify. It goes into the conference between the two bodies, and it will come out an amnesty bill. At that point, if it is voted on in the House and voted on in the Senate, we have amnesty. The country is over, and the only thing left for people like you and me to do, Sean, is to punish the people who destroyed America.
And we have one more.
If amnesty goes through, it's over. You have 11 million instantly legalized. They are allowed to let in all of their distant family members under chain migration. We are talking about another 30 million unskilled immigrants, which is what they are. They will not be paying taxes. I don't know what Rand Paul thinks he's talking about. It will bankrupt the country. Moreover, contrary to what your friend Karl Rove says, Hispanics are not natural Republicans. This will be a disaster for the Republican Party. We'll never win another national election. Thank you, Marco Rubio.
And see, the thing is, as I said before, you know.
Hey, I think she is misconstruing something there.
You think?
If you follow her own logic.
No. That can't be done now. She don't have logic.
If you follow her own statement.
Statement. Thank you.
She said, if we do this, it destroys the whole country. And then if we do this, in 20 years, we can't win another election.
Yes.
These statements do not match. If the country is over, you can't have elections.
That's right. What's she even talking about?
Now,
why don't you pack up bags and leave?
Yeah. You know, but what she...
But she never said she was leaving.
Makes sense within her own stuff. But what she's really saying, again, with all these Republicans, is there, you know, hatred, their racist fear-mongering. What she's really saying is, we will not be allowed to win another elecciones in Kiev.
The elecciones.
Really afraid. It's like, oh my gosh, our country will suddenly become non-Aryan.
Well, just listen to what Louis, I don't know what I'm doing, Big Ears Gilbert said.
They would have young women who became pregnant, would get them into the United States to have a baby. They could be raised and coddled as future terrorists. And then one day, 20, 30 years down the road, they could be sent in to help destroy our way of life.
Like Obama was.
Yes, the future terrorist.
Oh, he is the raising future terrorists. If you let them in, they're sitting there and they've been brainwashed. Being brainwashed by these people who are so stupid they can't stay in their own country to make a living.
Because if we got to keep the white race pure, we can't have these genetic time bombs coming in, creeping into the country, going off in 20 or 30 years.
Need a genetic time bomb. They sat there and let it happen around them.
The man who created this whole policy was called Reagan, and it was called Reaganomics. I mean, you know, they wanted, look, here's the, you know, the devil's always in the details, right? Well, when you want a workforce that you have to pay, and then you don't have to give any kind of benefits to, or any kind of medical or retirement, anything, any kind of package at all to you, you can just laugh at all day long, guess what you get?
That's it.
20 million illegal immigrants.
Well,
it's a created system for profit. And then they go, oh, what? What's that
in Casablanca? The Nazis were closed out of place, and the owner of the cafe came over to the prefect and said, oh, by the way, he says, I'm shocked. No, that there's been gambling going on in this place. He said, you must close up immediately. He said, oh yes, sir. Here's your winnings.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, give me a break here.
Exactly.
Well, let's hear what the genius Rand Paul and Rubino said.
Nobody questions his legal authority, but I think he's really losing the moral authority to lead this nation.
I think President Obama is the most radical president we've ever seen.
And in the months to come, I'm really going to focus on the issue of repealing Obamacare.
They're still trying to repeal Obamacare. What don't they understand about this? It is passed. It was okayed by the Supreme Court. I mean, what don't they understand?
About a couple weeks ago that the White House press secretary said it's period. Period. Law. Why are we? Look, they've had 40-something votes now against it or whatever. They keep doing this. It's like this, you know, this stupid.
38 votes.
That they're doing.
I mean, and see, all the moronic individuals that are paying attention to them, and that's all you people listening to Fox News, you don't know the Constitution. You don't know that it would take two-thirds of the states to override the Supreme Court.
Right.
Two-thirds.
Right.
Come on. Give me a freaking break. Ain't going to happen. The law is the law, Bachman. I'm going to run for office, and I'm going, and I led the way to, and I repealed.
Here's the thing that infuriates me about it to begin with. You know, again, we already have socialism in this country.
Social what?
Oh.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, we already do, we've got nationalized education. You know, we've got health care for elderly people. We've got retirement benefits. We've got all these things, you know. This is the most boring over-argument of all time. On top of that, it's the Obamacare, and I hate that term, by the way, just Obamacare. You know, they try to slur the whole thing up and all. It was the Affordable Health Care Act, right? Affordable. That's all it was. It was a very minor tweak. It was not a fix. It wasn't an overhaul. It wasn't a new system. It wasn't communism imported or any of these other things. It was a simple tweak to the existing system to lower cost. That's all it did.
Okay.
It created things like, you know, exchanges that the states have to do so that they can just provide competition and there's not monopolies in certain areas because that's what exists.
Monopoly.
That a lot of poor areas have monopolies.
Well, it only became worse when W put through for prescription drugs without paying for it.
Well, yeah, and that's part of the thing that, you know, the bankrupting of America that we've been,
and it's not doing us any good.
But the thing is, it's not a healthcare reform. It's not a healthcare overhaul.
No,
it's just a tweak to the existing system in order to save money. So there's nothing bad about it to begin with.
Well, the thing, no. Yes.
Eliminate paperwork and put it
in. No, but that's not why they're mad at him.
No.
They're mad at him because the tweet that they're doing is cutting the profits of the providers.
Exactly.
It is not, and they keep saying, oh, they're cutting your Medicaid. Bro, you have almost 1.5 times more effective health care in your plan than you originally did.
Exactly,
for free.
Right, and this is exactly the point. It is that, and this is why also it was such a shocker this week. We want to get into that.
Ooh, shocker.
Supreme Court ruled in favor of people over corporations. It was a complete shocker.
Yeah.
That's often ruled in favor of
corporations. Oh, let's see. What's the Clarence Thomas vote on that?
I don't even know. He's one of the few that did. But so they just, you know, everybody was paying attention, I hope, this week, where they had the court case brought for the breast cancer research.
Right.
You know,
that was just fast.
Thing called the human genome.
Right? Yep.
Where they have traced everything and mapped the whole, you know, DNA sequence everywhere. And so they got our genome, and they can see all of our little bitty, you know, individual traits and proteins and everything. They can find everything now, and it's all, yay, okay, we've got a map. Well, what companies went out and did instantly is started trying to patent every gene. So it's like, I've got brown eyes, I've got blue eyes, I've got the curly hair, I've got no hair, I've got. So if anybody came up with something and said, well, I've got,
I own it.
I've got a cream for moles, I own moles,
right?
Pay me, right? You know, that's
well, this, you know, I don't know if you ever saw it, and I cut you up, but on the BBC, they had a series started this year. It was called Orphan Black.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about that.
Yeah.
They created 7 people, all lookalikes,
right.
All twins. And what happened was, come to find out, some of the original ones that they started, one guy had a tail.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so they tried to kill off all of them because this company that created them owned the genes to create it.
Right. And this is the same thing. They tried to do that, but these ladies, anyway, they were trying to get effective, cheap, and competitive testing to do for different types of breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And this company was blocking
it. Yeah.
Because they said, well, we own breast cancer research genes. Yeah, well, that was thrown out. Said you're full of everything. Guess what? The human genome is pre-existing.
That's right.
You know, which is one of the tenets of Obamacare. If you want to get pre-existing conditions,
right.
Do not disqualify.
That's
it.
Right.
So pre-existing humanity didn't, you know, disqualify it from being used. So you can.
Oh, so that means these Frankenstein entities that create afterward, okay, would not be pre-existing.
Right. But here's the thing. Already, is it within the you know, hours of that, other companies went ahead and put in.
That's right. Yes, I heard that.
Cut the cost immediately.
Right.
So yesterday you would have been paying, you know, $10,000. Today you're gonna pay $2,000.
Yeah. Well, Representative Wasserman was talking about that last night on the show because she had a mastectomy too, and
right.
She said, you know. When I first went, you know, because I had problems in my family, my ovaries and breast cancer, it's all in the family. And they said, well, I said, look, you got to, can I get a second opinion? He says,
no.
There is no second opinion. We're the only ones to do it.
Right.
So I had to take their word for it that I need to have it done. Otherwise, and he said, you know, I checked yesterday the cost that I paid, which I don't want to say, the cost that I paid now was 1/2.
Right.
If I would have got it done.
Okay. So, here we go. 50% saving and the ability to have something as simple as a second opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you want to take somebody's word for it?
I mean, why is that a bad thing?
Unless I give you the word.
The corporations, they want you to pay twice as much and have no choice.
No choice.
No second opinion.
That's right.
But see, again, why is that a bad thing? Why are they so adamantly against that?
Because, well, what did you say in the very beginning here?
Right.
Hey, it don't matter if it's NSA, secrets, or anything else. Profit!
Yes.
Remember the Ferengi on, what was it, on Deep Space Nine? The Ferengi. Hey, I don't care what it is. It's all about profit.
Yep.
Profit!
And that's what these people are like. And that's one thing that drives me nuts when they try to say their family values and all that. You know, they care about the little
family. Yeah.
Children.
Because there's more profit.
You know, it's like there's
well. Then now, listen, you know, and what I'm playing next, this is for my cousin George, because this is his famous person. You know, here's the question. What would Alex Rodriguez do during his 100-game suspension? What do you think he would do? Alex Rodriguez.
Polish his bat.
Polish his bat. Why? He don't use it. Let's see. He can't be playing up to coming Diaz anymore. She's gone. Let's see. Madonna now. Well, let's see what Letterman. Letterman gave us what he would be doing.
Okay. Going to get a 100-game suspension, Alex Rodriguez, and you think, oh my God, he's out with an injury and a 100-game suspension. What will Alex Rodriguez do during the 100-game suspension? So we put together a segment entitled, "How will A-Rod spend his 100-game suspension?" I hope you enjoy it. There it is, right there.
Missing putts, missing baskets, missing dartboards.
In other words, what he'd be doing, he'll be doing the same thing when he's on the field, missing the ball. He'll be missing the putts on the golf. He'll be missing basket shooting.
Yep.
He'll be no. So if George wants to say anything, he can say anything. But but I am telling you, this is Alex Rodriguez. Now, so wait and see. So there could be 38 guys. 38 guys who would be suspended. 38. I mean, you know. Now, the problem is, you know, if everybody's using it, then they got to let everybody use it and then start a new Hall of Fame. For those that did.
The mutant Hall of Fame.
The mutant.
Basically, as much as
I'm. The mutant Hall of Fame.
No, they're not. I mean, come on.
Now, but we don't want to make this like the guy coming out with two heads. Therefore, he has two bats in his hand, too.
Yeah, but
no. That's a little too much now.
Yeah,
we ain't changed this like basketball.
Too much, incrementally. I mean, ever since, you know, McGuire.
No. Baseball is pure. We don't change it. We're not like basketball. We change it every 5 minutes because the guy's 7'7" now.
Yeah.
He should have been disqualified for coming in.
It is incrementally that way. Baseball, when I was growing up, the guys used to look, you know, they're like little, you know, twigs running around on the field. Nowadays, they look like football players. I mean, give me a break. You got these guys showing up, and, you know, they got muscles on their muscles on their muscles, and they all are 300 pounds.
And their heads are twice the size
as
they were the year before,
right?
When they came in.
And it becomes, but here's the deal. Like with basketball, you get to where you squeeze out the normal players.
Normal?
Talented players.
Oh, the talent.
You know,
okay.
Play if you're, oh, you're only, you know, what, 5'6"?
Well, you see, here's the problem with that. These guys now, these owners are so grubby for money. They're so grubby for money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they think. Oh, yeah, he's taking the second coach up higher. But you see, when Bighead from the Giants started shooting up these steroids, his head got twice the size, his feet got twice the size, his body got twice the size, but he didn't hit for a better average. I would say, we talk about this with George all the time, warning track power. When he was hitting the ball, he would have been in the Hall of Fame anyway because he stole more bases and he had more hits and more bases stolen than anybody ever in baseball. But, oh, I want that thing to home runs. So he's now, he went from warning track power where he hit the ball long way, but it just stayed inside the ballpark and the guy made the catch at the fence. So now he comes in four sizes bigger and he hits it over the fence. So that's all it does. It doesn't make you a better fielder. It doesn't make you a better hitter. It doesn't make you a faster runner. It just gives you more power to hit the ball farther. But the problem is, if you couldn't hit the ball in the first place, it don't help you.
Right.
So these guys at about 236 that are now taking the steroids, they're still going to hit 236, but they might have 15 more home runs.
Yeah, they're going to hit much more powerfully. That's one thing that, you know, it doesn't matter. It, you know, in one way, this is the misconstruction of things in across the board sports. Just because you can take some linemen in football and shoot them full of growth hormones here and make them gigantic so that nobody can move, you know, the center or whatever.
Well, no, that's, you know.
That's a squatting.
Well, what is that?
If the guy's something, you know, 400 pounds and you can't move him, okay, he served a purpose. However, and you know this is to be true, just because you're bigger doesn't make you a better runner. It doesn't make you faster. It doesn't mean anything. Actually, it usually is the reverse. The more bulk you put on,
right? Well, yeah. Now, see, a lot of these athletes are bigger than they were in all the athletes. They're a lot bigger than they were 10 years ago. And they, I mean, you got these centers that run the 50 yard dash in God knows 4 seconds. But the problem is, though, you know, one, are they going to keep that up the whole game? And two, does that give them the ability to learn how to play the game better? You know, it's just like, I always talk about this with George, and, you know, half these guys playing ball now, half of these, I'm talking about baseball, would never, never pass the classroom orientation, because all they think about is just go out there and hit the ball. Go out there and hit the ball. They don't worry about catching. They don't worry about sliding. They don't know about throwing the ball in front of the runner instead of in back of the runner to give the runner an extra base. They don't know who to throw the man to the cutoff. They don't know the game, the fundamentals of the game. And that's the one thing I like about the Dodger organization. When you were in the Dodger organization, you didn't come up until you know the game. Forget about the hitting. Now, of course, that was, I guess, primary. But if you didn't know the game, you didn't come up. Maury Wills was 15 years in the minor leagues before he came up to the Dodgers. 15 years. So if Maury Wills would have came, and that's because he had guys like Pee Wee Reese playing shortstop, you know, and so
again,
they were pushed down.
You got seasoned and you learned your craft.
Right.
It wasn't just that, you know, you're the Hulk and you walk up and you can break the bat.
Right. Right.
But my problem with it becomes the slippery slope. If you allow a little bit of it, you allow all of it. Right.
Yes, well,
because you can't just say, well, this is enhancement here. That
you're talking like Wayne LaPierre now.
Well, yeah, but this is the problem, because
put that gun away. Oh, okay.
And I talked about some of this before, but like in the Olympics, they now started allowing in augmented.
Yeah, these games.
So you've got people like they let in a guy who had
no legs. Right, the guy in South Africa. So he goes to him and shoots and kills his girlfriend.
Now, he did a hard, you know, but the problem becomes they've gotten to the point with science now where you can augment a human. So why not then get all your joints and tendons replaced if there's a better material, right?
Better material.
You've already got the capability of doubling your muscle mass and all that kind of stuff. We already do that. But the problem they're coming with now is that when you put too much, because they've been able to literally double muscle mass through injection, then it breaks the bones and stuff. You get the muscle.
Because the bones aren't ready for that. Right.
But
okay.
I'm just saying, you know, you get into, why not make your tendons 10 times better and springier, and let's put in some carbon fiber into your bones and make them 10 times stronger. And you know what I mean? And you begin simply, why not let the bionic player play, because he can run faster, longer, and hit harder than the normal person, and you just squeeze them out. It's all fallacious and wrong.
Well, we have another call right now. And hello, who's this? Hello?
Hello.
Is this Lee?
How you doing, Mike? This is Lee Little, the president of the Union County African American Caucus. How are you?
I am doing fine, Lee. You're from Union County, right?
That's correct.
Union County. Let me ask you a question. Have they passed the Martin Luther King birthday celebration down there? Do they allow that still? Has that been yet?
They did finally pass it, but I think it was the year after it came up.
Okay. Well, that's progress.
Do they have a street downtown?
Yeah.
MLK, or
Right, yeah. Do they have a Robert E. Lee Street, or do they have an MLK Street in Union County?
on the books?
Well, they have a, they definitely have an MLK Boulevard, and I don't know that they have a Robert E. Lee Street, but I know they have the Confederate Veterans Memorial downtown in front of the old courthouse.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. So what's the story been going on in Union County? And now let me just say something. We're going to have the chair of the party is supposed to be on. I thought he'd be on by now. But these wing nuts in Union County did not and could not and were told that they could not vote in the convention that was held in April because they were not organized. So any attempt upon the concerned, what do they call it, concerned council citizens? Any attempt of them saying that they have created a Union County Democratic Party, it's completely bull. And you know the rest. Because you can't create a party unless the congressional district chair, county chair, is okay. And that has not happened. So they are operating on, okay, that's what it is. They're operating. That's how they're operating. So they are not a, so what's of the African-American Caucus and the Black Leadership Caucus in Union County to get the vote together to get out and get something done?
Well, I mean, the situation with the Democratic Party here is what it is. It's a contentious situation. There's a lot of division. And unfortunately, that division is racial in nature. And so that is what it is. And what the African American Caucus is doing is we're continuing to engage the voters of Union County, and we're continuing to educate them with regard to what the Democratic Party message and platform is. And we're
right.
doing that because there's a lot of negative information out there coming from the Regressive Party. So what we want to do is we want to have our citizens armed and ready to respond to anything that they may hear or someone may tell them at work or in church or wherever. So that's the basis for what we're doing right now. We're preparing for the 2014 elections and the 2013 municipal elections. We do have several great people running for the city council here this fall, one of which is Tanita Anthony. She's running for a city council seat, and she asked for our support, and we intend to fully support her in every way that we can. So that's what we're doing. And another thing that we're doing is we're collaborating with other organizations, the Black Leadership Caucus, the Union County Community, the Community Coalition here in Union County, which you should call them and try to get them on the show. What the Union County Community Coalition is it's the leaders of every African American organization within the county. And their goal is to have African Americans speak with one voice. So what uh-huh. we're trying to do is galvanize our strength by getting our message to all of the leaders so they can go back to their organization so that we truly can speak with one voice. And we're doing that because we want to be a strong force in our community and in our state. I mean, it's crazy when you see what the state is doing, and we're partly at fault for that, because in 2010 we didn't come out and vote because it was an off year, off presidential year election, and the results of that is what we're experiencing right now.
Well, the North Carolina was taken over by the concerned citizens. So there's nothing we can do about that unless the people in the rest of the state that did not vote in 2010 want to accept that and live with it. So, but if they want to accept that and live with it, then I don't want to hear any complaints. You know, as I was talking to one of the people, and I don't know if it was Pamela or Antoinette, and I said, you know, if you accept what you get if you don't do anything about it.
Exactly. Let me say one other thing, Mike. President Obama lost Union County 63% to 37%. And
okay.
People, this is a Republican county, and you probably have heard me say this before, but what that means is that all the Republicans, half the independents, and all of the European or white Democrats voted for the Republican candidate, and all the African Americans voted for Obama. I say that, you know, they talk about all these democratic ideals and all the things that they want to accomplish, but if they truly wanted those to accomplish that, they wouldn't have voted for McCrory or that other guy. I can forget his name, but the businessman. Anyway, their presidential candidate. That's how important he was. I can't even remember his name now. But and so that's what we have here. And so
right.
We fight that. We fight that by educating our people, by getting them to the polls, by showing them, you know, how important politics really is. And we're doing that. We're making a serious effort to do this. Education is the key. Just like in success in business school, you know, you have to know what's going on to be able to make headway in what you want to do.
Well, it's a
one point that you're making there about educating the people and getting them back out, and I agree with you putting some blame squarely on people's shoulders for not coming out. It's one of the things that infuriated me. You know, after all this success of getting Obama elected after that historic election, it seems like instead of stepping up and doing it again and helping them solidify a legacy by solidifying his victory, everybody kind of went high five and walked away. They left the guy out to drive. He just was sitting there, and everybody's like, oh, well, you know, we got the presidency. We're done. Yoo-hoo, let's go party. And now, at your hands, we're suffering the consequences across the board in a whole bunch of ways. You know, we've got stalemate in Congress. We've got several states that have turned completely over to Republicans. And it's affecting everybody from the, you know, smallest town all the way up. We wouldn't have a knockdown, drag-out fight with Obamacare and everything else, if not for the poor showing in the election.
Well, the thing is that, Barack Obama, you know, it amazed me how dumb, you know, don't use the word dumb. Yeah, stupid is stupid. How you could think that because you elected the president of the United States, the first black man in the White House, that there would be a pot in every kitchen, that you living in a rural town in South Carolina would think that you had the right to go in anywhere you wanted to and demand anything you wanted to because the president was going to back you up. I mean, you have to change that. You have to change the day going. You know, and I shouldn't even say, I shouldn't pick on South Carolina anymore because South Carolina is way ahead of North Carolina. Do you know that we're now 47th in education in less than a year? We dropped to 47th in education. They have cut. This is the most racist and discriminatory and job cutting state in the entire United States. We are lower than Mississippi and Alabama. They did it in less than a year. They did it in less than a year. They changed the whole thing about how people got educated here and how people got their jobs here. Everything in less than a year. What do you think they could do in what they're going to do in 4 years?
Yeah. Well, they said
they
just this week. What's that? I am amazed. And what they've done is they planned this. And,
I can't understand you. You need to talk more in the phone. I can't understand you.
I said they had a plan, and their plan's working. They've done everything that they wanted to do. And, this wasn't something that happened out of the blue. I mean, planned this. They worked their plan, and now that's what they want. They want our women pregnant and barefoot, and they want us all stupid so we can't recognize what they're doing. But that's the nature. Unfortunately, that is the current nature of the Republican Party. Doing it, they did it quickly, and just in case,
because they controlled everything in the House and Senate. That was the only reason why they were able to do it quickly. But then, and the problem is that they didn't plan on this because they never even dreamed that they would take over the state first time in 25 years. But see, when they took it over, there was so much buffalo running around, you didn't have to be a dead shot like Wild Bill Cody. You could just shoot and you would knock something down. That's what they're doing here. They're just shooting and knocking in front of them down.
You haven't heard of the Southern Initiative? This has been a part of their platform and what they've wanted to do for a long time. And now that they have the state, they're going to do what they want to do until we can change. And unfortunately, there's nothing that we can do because they got to draw the district lines after the census. So We're between a rock and a hard place, unless the court overturn some of the districts, which I'm hoping and praying that they do.
Well, I believe, yes.
They are prepared. They're upholding their plans, just like you say. They act swiftly. They take advantage of every chance they get. But even though they do something incredibly swift, it takes a long time to undo the damage.
Well, when you control the Senate and we got to control the Senate and the House.
Even if not, it takes a long time to undo things. You know, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like if you look back at the Clinton years, it took him two terms of work just to undo the damage or some of the damage of the Reagan-Bush years, not all the way. And then for Obama, he spent his entire presidency trying to undo the damage of W and the wars and the economy. So, again, when they do something immediately, it has repercussions for a very long time. So people have got to pay attention. I mean, I think he is absolutely right. They've had these plans in the works for years. I mean, it isn't instantaneous thing or an accident that they, you know, Ronald Reagan goes to stand on top of a dam in Mississippi that's well known for one specific thing and announces his presidency. I mean, they do have a very cohesive, very hard strategy that they've been unfolding for a very long time. They've been tweaking it and getting it better and better. But they have all these plans, these tax programs, these anti-abortion programs, these school programs that are already preset. And as soon as they get in power anywhere, they just start rolling them out one after the other. And everybody's like, stop. But they're already, they've already been think tanks. They're already on the shelf, ready to go.
Yeah. And that's the major
thing.
Another thing, Michael, that you have to look at is clearly the part of the million Democrats, and there's 1.6 1.9 million Republicans in the state. So there's no way that we should be losing anything. But one of the problems is that within the Democratic Party, you have Dixiecrats who don't want to move forward. What they want to do is regress with the Republicans back to a time back to the 50s. When they controlled everything, when all things weren't equal, and so part of the problem is the civil war, no pun intended, that's going on within the Democratic Party. I mean, you have these Dixiecrats; they're conservative, they call themselves blue dogs or whatever, which means they're fiscal conservatives. And supposedly, but they're just as much Tea Party members as the Republicans. I mean, and look, Union County is a prime example. Look at who they're trying to get as chair here, Nancy Rory. See, this woman and her family stood in front of the Board of Elections after the 1965 Voting Rights Act was passed. Her mother was the chair of the Board of Elections in this county, and they attempted to prevent, after the law was passed, they attempted to prevent black folks from coming in to register to vote. So if that's the mindset that you're dealing with, those are the people, you know, that you're dealing with, you know, and you know, the Frank McGurk and all these people who are supposed to be big wheels here, that is the mindset. And so what they're doing is they're fighting progressive movement forward.
I understand all that. But you see, you can't take Union County in itself because Union County is 70% Republican anyway. So Anything that goes there, I mean, it don't matter whether they vote for the President of the United States or not. They didn't, and they still won. So... But I am not talking about that. I'm talking about out of the 30% which is left, and a quarter of them are white, a minority, only a quarter of them voted. The problem is we don't need one more new voter. We have right now, If every election was tomorrow and every voter who was eligible to vote voted, Obama would have won by 10 million votes. But
exactly.
People don't vote because they don't feel it's in their personal interest. This is not going to hurt me. And it does. What we need to do is we need to get people to understand that the voting is not 4 years apart. It's every single year someone is running for office.
Yeah.
And we need to get into the ability to have people understand that they need to go out one time every year, not 15 times every year, one time every year and vote. That's all we're asking for people. And they don't feel they have to because it's not in their own self-interest. So how do we change and make every vote in their self-interest? That's what we need to do.
Well, I know that's a good question. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tom.
That's the question to you. How do we get people to feel that voting is in their own self-interest, even though it's not going to affect anything immediately where they're standing in the doorway of their house?
You have to engage them between elections. You have to have a continual educational program where you go to churches, you go to synagogues, you go every place you can and engage them and educate them on the issues. That's the only way that we can you have to keep it before them. And that's the only way that I see that. We need to engage more than just, it can't be just the party. It's got to be the entire community. And that means the civic, social, and the phonic organizations have to be engaged. And they have to, so we have to engage them as well. Trust and find out the issues. We have to gain the trust so that they'll listen to us, first of all, and then we have to explain the issues to them, and we have to do it in their vernacular.
Well, you see, there's only one issue. And that's to get your ass in the vote. That's the only issue. Vote. That's the only. If you vote for Joe Blow, jump it over the moon. But don't complain if you don't vote. This is the problem. We have less voting in this country than we do in some of the most rigid theocratic countries. It doesn't make any sense. It's just like the, I talked about before, Casablanca. They're closing it down because the Nazis closed it down. He said, hey, stop, get out. And he said, oh, yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry, here's your winnings. I didn't know gambling was going on here. This is complete nonsense.
Another thing, Michael, is when people are struggling just to make it, just to make ends meet and keep food on the table and gas in the car and all of that and struggling to find jobs, their mind isn't on elections and voting. Their mind is on how am I going to pay this rent or this power bill and all of this.
Lee, so, that's bullshit. They're like that because they didn't vote. If they voted, they might not be in that situation. We got Ninja Turtle up in Raleigh right now, who's governor, who cut the corporate taxes, but he also cut the wages for unemployment in half.
Yeah.
So, hey, why did that happen? Because nobody voted for this mutant Ninja Turtle.
Exactly. Unfortunately, I'm glad all of this is happening because now people will see how important elections are.
Oh, gee, I'm glad you are so smart in saying that. Show me. Show me that this is, this was the final straw. Show me. No one's going to be the final straw.
Well, I don't know whether it's the final straw, but one thing I know is people are seeing their kids, they can't go to Head Start and all of these programs because they've cut the money. So there is a direct effect. I mean, it has directly affected a lot of people, and it's affected poor people more than anything else.
The people you were talking about, that their kids going to school because their money was cut, they vote. Those are not the people I'm talking about. We don't have a problem with voting.
Well, maybe they'll come out and vote now. Maybe. See, sometimes you have to, a baby has to feel the heat and feel that pain before they'll recognize that this thing's hot. So now.
That's not true either, because I just burnt my hand and got blisters on it right now for taking the daggone group that I was cooking on the grill in a closed container and picked it up. I was coming in the house and grabbed the metal portion instead of the closed end portion. So they got to do it, babies. I'm an adult, and it happened to me.
All I'm saying is now that they see the consequences of the voting and they feel it in their pocket, maybe that'll motivate them to get more involved in their community.
And maybe I'll buy a car and they ain't gonna think about voting.
Well, unfortunately,
I'm optimistic. Well, I think people I didn't mean to cut you off, Tom. I think that people see exactly where the Progressive Party is coming from, and now I think that they're going to be more engaged in the future much.
What did they say, Thomas?
The only problem that I have on, you know, waiting for my fellow citizens to wake up and vote is that in the meantime, you know, our wages going down, our real taxes are going up because they shifted all the corporate tax in North Carolina to the middle class now. You know, that just passed yesterday in the Senate. And then, on top of that, besides the fact that they're destroying education, you know, they're doing that thing where they're going to take all the public money and put it into the private charter schools and all that. Well, even more important, you know, we've got Newt himself and the government.
Yep.
And the first thing out of his mouth when he got there was he's going to undo Bev's block on fracking. So now we're going to crack the whole state, which means for the rest of the time, it's going to poison our water.
I thought we'd be getting fracked all the time anyway.
We're getting fracked now.
Right.
So the problem is, though, it's going to have real long-term effects for hundreds of years. You know, a little bit of election goes a long way. But they're going to store things for, you know, our children. That isn't
an easy resource. Well, hey, all I know is that, I got to get mine now because my grandkids ain't going to have jack. Because, hey, you know, Mikey's saying, you know, we have to save this for the grandkids. I say, hey, grandkids didn't help me. Who was that with me?
That sounds like a Republican.
Well, yes, that's true. I guess I have to be more Republican.
It's all about me.
It's all about me. Yeah. Please. Since they've been born, they live here, sleep here, eat here, more than they do at their own house.
Yep.
Now, what's that all about?
And I pay for
their school. What's that all about? So, we need to pass it on. Like, the Mutant Ninja Turtle is doing up and around. He's passing every down the house. I'm going to pass it on to them. I mean, is that the way to travel now, Lee?
I guess that's the way it's going to be for right now until we can change things.
Well, okay. What I...
Even these Republicans are fighting each other.
Oh, yeah, well,
we do need to fight back. I agree with Lee. We need to do everything we can to get better education up. Because in this way, Mike is right. We absolutely have to have our numbers turn out. We've got to turn things around, or else guess what? It ain't ever turning around. You know?
It ain't ever turning around. And, you know, and then... We have all these clowns who are just quitting in the middle of their term. We have never seen people quit in the middle of their terms like in the last few years. So they can go out to these supposedly think tanks to help. I mean, that clown from South Carolina who quit in the middle of his term to say, oh, yes, I am going to work for Heritage Foundation, because I can affect government policy more as a member of the Heritage Foundation. I mean, have you ever heard?
But in a way, he's being honest, if you think about it. Since we've so polluted our politics with money now that we give the corporations and everything else equal voice to a voter, now these think tanks and lobbying groups and all that probably do have as much or more influence on politics and people. So it makes sense for these people to quit politics and go straight to the
main source.
Yeah, might as well go through the actual money holder. And it probably does affect politics more. It's a more direct route, and it's more, in their twisted way, it's a more honest route He just goes straight for the money.
Oh, no, come on. We're talking about honesty now, right? We're talking about honesty now, right? Amongst these. You know, I would, you know, who's the one that said that's one of the old mafia bosses in the 40s said, hey, you think I'm a criminal? Those people down running those banks down there are more criminal than I am.
Oh, now that's true.
I mean, you know, so.
Wall Street did pull off the biggest. No repercussions for them.
None. None whatsoever. Well, Lee, how is Diane? Now, she's the new second vice chair of the 8th Congressional District, right?
Yes, she is. And congratulations to her after what she's been through. She's deserving more than that, but that'll suffice for right now.
Okay, and where is she at this glorious day?
She is on her way to a church function. The ladies of the church are getting together for, you know, like a tea and dessert function.
Uh-huh. Okay. Very good.
That's where she is, and I guess, you know, she's doing good, though.
I want to thank you, Lee, for being a guest on the show today, and what are you planning on getting through with the state chair and getting a functioning Democratic Party run?
Well, whenever we can get people together who want to run the party according to the plan of organization, then that's when that'll happen. But until everybody's on board, you know, and wants to play by the same rules, then you know, when we can all play by the same rules, plan of organization, then that's when we'll get together. Otherwise, you know, it's not going to happen anytime soon, I don't think. And unfortunately, that plays right into the other party's hands, and that's what they want. You know, they want a weakened city. And in my mind, if they elect who they want to elect here anyway, those people are no different from Republicans. So, I mean, what's going to happen is if they...
We can work with Republicans. We can work with Republicans. Now, I just want to hear you. These people, these teabaggers, they don't care about governing. All they care about is getting enough and saying enough loud bull to have people recognize who they are to get them hired. Now, let me just tell you a little something. This is what happened. This is what's happening to all these. Now, there are some Democrats that are in here, but most of them are Republicans. Just listen. This is what the Republicans are doing when they leave and why they leave so often.
After serving 12 years in the United States Senate, Senator Ben Nelson of Nebraska left the Senate last year, and he founded a lobbying firm. So left the Senate, now in a lobbying firm. Texas Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison put in nearly 20 years in the United States Senate before she, too, left and joined a lobbying firm. Senator Kit Bond, 24 years in the United States Senate. He cashed out and is now a lobbyist. Senator John Kyle, 26 years on Capitol Hill. He left the Senate in January to join a lobbying firm. Hey, whatever happened to old Senator Evan Bayh, my old friend? All right, lobbyist. What happened to old Senator Bob Bennett? Lobbyist. How about Byron Dorgan? Whatever happened to Senator Byron Dorgan? Oh, lobbyist. Chris Dodd, he used to be a senator. Now, guess what? Hey, lobbyist. Blanche Lincoln, remember when we made a giant life-sized flat Blanche Lincoln and tried to mail it to Claire McCaskill in Missouri? Senator Blanche Lincoln, gone from the Senate, and now is a lobbyist. Judd Gregg was a senator, now is a lobbyist. And Scott Brown, remember Scott Brown from Massachusetts? What has become of him? Actually, this one is really interesting. Actually, just kidding. This one's not interesting at all. Scott Brown did what they all did and went to go work for a lobbying firm as well. That is how it works. He's just like all the rest of them.
What you see is, and there was about half of them were Democrats. That thank you for the Rachel Maddow Show for have this, but so it really doesn't matter because people don't care. They don't care. And if they see that a politician don't care, why should they care? Yeah.
I mean, follow the money.
Yep.
Well, it is, sadly. It's all about the money, which also, ironically or intentionally, drives down voter turnout.
Yep.
People start losing faith in the system.
Right.
Well, my vote doesn't count.
Right.
I'm not a multimillionaire. But that's, you know, part of the game. But anyway, just looking at numbers, I went and looked it up. You know, yesterday there was an election in Iran, right? Now, this is not a poster child for democracy. However, they do have elections. You know, they just don't. White Council, but they do have them. Anyway, their elections, at the close estimates that they have just right now, preliminary, 70% of voters turn out. So, even giving them 10% of a mistaken margin of the error there, if that's a total mistake or somehow another, that's still more than turnout. That's still more than turnout this week. You know, we're looking at sometimes 30-40% on that moderately interesting place. So think about that.
Yeah, people don't turn out. The president ain't running, I ain't turning out.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Well,
what? Yeah, but you reap what you sow. If you don't turn out and vote, then you get, you know, shadow.
That's it.
But, you know, at least, hey, all you people, all you kind of interested people out of North Carolina, at least turn out as much as you're wrong. Okay? Can you muster that?
Unbelievable. Okay, Lee, thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. I want to play something for you because I want to change something a little bit. And just listen to this.
All known for weeks now that the law written by Congress 100 years ago on 501c4 tax status says that an organization must be engaged exclusively in social welfare in order to qualify for that status. And the law has said for years that a social welfare organization is not organized for profit but operated exclusively for the promotion of social welfare. But in 1959, for reasons no one can figure out, the IRS changed the word in the law exclusively to the word primarily in guidance that the IRS writes for its agents in enforcing the law. And in 1959, the IRS violated the law by changing the law without congressional authority. That was all in the hearing today. If the IRS hadn't changed that law in 1959, every political organization applying for 501c4 status would have been rejected, and there would have been nothing scandalous about that. Today, Washington is pretending it's scandalous that the political organizations applying for the 501c4 status that they did not deserve and should have been, that they should have been rejected, that the scandal is that they didn't get approved fast enough. They were all approved. They just didn't get approved fast enough. But only a few Democrats in Washington realize what the IRS scandal really is. Here's Nevada Congressman Steve Horsford.
The law is exclusively. Why don't you have to follow the law?
I actually have to follow the law and regulation.
So the law is exclusively.
The law is exclusively, and the implementing regulation is primary, and that's part of the challenge.
So the regulation is not in compliance with federal law.
I'm
correct.
I don't know that I can answer that question. I think that's something that we have to review with.
Well, you said earlier that primary activity is not the same as exclusive.
It's not, and
so therefore it's out of compliance with federal law. And I believe, Mr. Chairman, that agencies must follow the law. We, as Congress, set the law. We haven't changed the law from exclusively. And it's important that you implement your regulations accordingly. I'm glad to hear that you're reviewing that with the Treasury and that you've agreed to some bipartisan participation because the law is exclusively.
And I want to be clear, the ambiguity that's created between the law saying exclusive and the regulation saying primary is a problem. And it's, you know, it's one of the contributing
factors. And so therefore the reg needs to be changed to be in compliance with federal law. Unless Congress changes the law, That's the standard.
No, I mean, rest my freaking fracking case.
Fracking case, yeah.
I mean, it just makes no daggone sense. It said exclusively in some undercover CIA, NSA person changed it, just changed that one word, crossed it out. Maybe it was in disappearing ink and put primarily, which gave these clowns the other side to say, oh, it says primary. That means you can, because primarily doesn't mean, just like, is this your, they say on the IRS, well, is this your primary residence or is this your secondary residence? Oh, you have both, so you have a primary and a secondary. Well, this is what they were doing with their income taxes. They had a primary, what they're doing, and a secondary. The problem is their primary was 52% and their secondary was 48%. I mean, I should say, yeah, right. So the thing is, this is wrong. And every one of these cases brought by these so-called teabaggers was accepted. And the only reason why it ever came up is because when they were reading it, they knew the wording was exclusively. So they passed it on to the next higher up, and the next higher up says, okay, yeah, you're right. Gather all the ones that are using primary. And we will look at all of them in one lump to make sure they are not going 51% for political parties and 49% for the rest of the human society. So this ain't rocket science.
No.
And that fool ISA,
this is pointing out though the problem, because the regulation books that advise these little workers on how to follow the law.
Okay. Right.
Okay. This is, again, it's like a company. When a company does something, the employees are following along the company.
Right.
However, it may not be the black law.
Absolutely.
And this is one thing that they love. Republicans love the fuzzy mass, fuzziness where you fudge doctrine.
Right.
We went through a whole presidency of that where nothing was quiet, was seen, and
right.
What is the definition of
right.
The
truth?
What is
yeah.
You know,
what is the definition of is?
Yeah, it was all being. So that becomes a problem. And that kind of gets back to what we had talked about several times. One of the problems that I have with all of this privatization of everything is that the further and further afield you get from strict government and governance, you always get into these problems, because every company is out to how to make it best for them and their clients and how their bottom line, their profitability. And they're not worried about the law or the upholding the Constitution or anything. So if it touches this and touches that, and, you know, and then the next company that comes along touches that, and touches, you know, it gets further and further skewed
right.
Until everything is screwed up. And that's what breaks down our society. And that's why we need to keep this type of stuff, because, you know, all it takes is a couple of guidebooks being wrong and Xeroxed and wrong and Xeroxed and passed on, and, you know, and nobody knows the thing, you know.
Absolutely.
Then there's the disaster. No one knows, you know, everybody. It's the same way with that in Texas where they had the how many violations with that freaking company that blew up a whole town.
Oh, yeah, that's why they didn't get the money from FEMA.
Right.
And they're screaming, he's a thug. It's Obama. He's black. That's why he doesn't want to. We're white down here. He doesn't want to help us. Well, you know what? They were in violation of the law.
They were in violation of the law over and over.
And FEMA says, and it wasn't the president. FEMA says, you are in violation of the law by having this building like this. You are in violation of the law. So we don't have to pay you to pay your people, because you were in violation of the law. This has nothing to do with FEMA and not giving you money.
And I guarantee you, on top of that, wait for the law.
You'll wait for the law. Yeah, you'll be poor, right? Because, see, since FEMA isn't paying them, the people are going to sue that company.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, but that's what happens when you break the law.
Right.
The way it should be. But this gives and if we may, since we're going to run out of time, we'll mention this. About the U.S. agency. It said the next law has dropped here. So with the NSA thing, you know, it isn't just that the little guy, you know, came out and Snowden came out and said, oh, guess what happened? And everybody went, gasp.
Mm-hmm.
They said, here's the real story. So now it turns out, as some insiders are letting it be known,
disclosed in this fact that thousands upon thousands of companies in the U.S. have been working closely with the NSA and other agencies to provide all the sensitive information that they want in these networks and these gatherings.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing it in return for benefits and profits. So what they're doing is they give all their user information and their backdoor stuff. They said, like, Microsoft, for instance, gives government access to all their programs and all their secret trap doors and all this kind of stuff. But in return, these companies get insider information.
Right.
They get access to classified intelligence. They get access to things that are coming down the pike or in legislation or any other thing. So they said that now hardware, software manufacturers, bankers, internet security providers, satellite telecommunication companies, all these different groups are being provided sensitive and classified information and in advance of the public so that they can make profits and work on world markets, right, ahead of the curve. And in return, they're giving the information to the United States secret agencies so that they can say, hey, it's a fair exchange.
Yeah, right. Well, this is why Stewart went to jail.
Yeah. This is exactly what they're doing, though. This is what the problem is when you outsource all of this stuff, is this little, you know, quid pro quo, this little back and forth, and it's just unbelievable. These revelations that are coming out.
And, you know, in the days that if Obama wanted to change that, he'd be hung out to dry. There's no way you can do this over 4 years. No way you can do this over 8 years changing this.
No.
You'd have to have, like, three different terms.
Money.
Absolutely.
You know, you put what's going to happen eventually, guess what? Eventually, some company, foreign company or something else, is going to be compromised or bought out. Or,
oh, you mean like Snowden?
Or whatever else. No, it's going to be some company or something's going to come in. Just like, you know, like for instance, under the Bush administration, he tried to sell out our ports. You remember,
right,
he tried
right.
to sell every port to Dubai.
Right.
Well, you know, eventually China or somebody with big bucks is going to own the company or own the 51% of the stocks or whatever in the company and gain access to our sensitive data and do something like, oh, I don't know. Steal all of our military designs. Oh, wait, that already happened.
But
this is exactly how and why it's going to happen, and then we're not going to have a recourse because we have allowed it.
And then we'll come in and say, like, wait a minute, where did you do that? And then, like, Morgan Freeman said in Batman, did you get the memo?
Yeah.
No,
what's going to happen is all these Republicans going to come to Congress and then blame somebody like Obama.
Right.
And say that he did it.
Of course. Right. Well, before we had so much to get through on here, but I wanted to get through this. We still have got to. But I want you to listen to this scenario. Listen to this.
The crime is called DWB, driving while black, a crime committed when an officer racially profiles drivers. Pastor Curtis Mitchell says it happens to members of his congregation.
I had one of our associate pastors was pulled over with his wife, and he had three of his grandchildren in there. And he pulled over, the officer pulled him over, and when he pulled him over, he said, well, I didn't see your seatbelt. And then he come up, and all of them had their seatbelts on, you know, just because he was black.
Now, this happened in Washington, D.C. This person that this happened to, let me show you what has happened to him. That was like 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yesterday, that man, now Judge Robert Wilkins, was nominated by President Obama to the U.S. Court for Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. Robert Wilkins has spent his life fighting discrimination through the courts and winning, and he has just been nominated to the federal bench. But the policies that he was fighting then, those policies are still very much with us now. They've been established in cities across the country.
Now, this is the same man. 15 years ago, he was stopped for driving while black in the pouring rain, coming back from a funeral of a family member. They all had to stand by the side of the road. But before he got out of the car, he read verbatim the code to the traffic officer saying that he did not have to get out of his car and he did not want to have his car searched. And the officer said, so? All right. Yeah. So they all got out. They didn't fight him. They didn't argue. They all got rained and drenched. Now he is being appointed to the D.C. Court of Appeals, the highest court
outside the Supreme Court and is the biggest court that has not had but six members in 8 years because the Republicans don't want to fill the court. Because if they can't fill that court, nothing will get done.
Yeah, how many major cases?
Major cases all go through this court. So they had six members working triple overtime because they had three members short. So what he did was nominate three members at one time and let them knock down all three members. Then we'll all know where they are at.
Yeah, and that's where they are. And look, and this goes back to what we said earlier about voting, turning out to vote. It is so important in your local communities to turn out and vote.
Right.
And if you don't think it matters, take an instance like this. Here's a judge who knows what racial profiling is like. He's been there. He's stood in the drenching rain when it happened, right? Contrast that with the, what's the judge, I forget the lady's name, down in New Orleans, the 4th, 5th Circuit, whatever down there,
recently
got in trouble for racist conduct.
Right.
Now, this is a lady sitting already as a judge, legislating on the bench, and she publicly stated that she thinks blacks and Hispanics are violent and ignorant, and they should all be executed because it's a benefit to society if we get rid of them. And she said, and it's beneficial to them because they can go in peace to their maker and become better people in heaven.
Oh my God.
You get what you vote for. You can vote for your judges. You can vote for your local school boards. You can vote for your local, everything. So turn out and vote, or you're going to get the person who says, it's better to educate you because I don't like your skin color, and then you can go meet my God and be judged by him. You know. So what do you want? What kind of world do you want?
Oh, God. It can only be a better world. It can't get any better than this. Well, I wanted to go see Superman this weekend, but I don't feel good at all. This cold is killing me.
I've got a horrible cold.
And
worse, I've got a trip this weekend. I leave tomorrow morning.
Where?
I'm going up the mountains to some kind of a wedding. My wife's
some kind of wedding. That's a good way to put it.
Mountains and wedding. I'm not saying it, but I'm kind of a little scared.
Just leave a spare key here so I can get your papers out and give them to them when your body is missing.
Exactly.
It's not one of them small little towns that are up in the woods that we see on TV.
I'm pretty sure.
On the sci-fi channel.
Banjo.
Oh, Jesus, give me a break.
Yeah. So I'll be on top of the mountain. I won't be able to go anyway, but I'm sick.
There's nothing wrong with being, like, on top of the mountain.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Martin Luther said, not Luther King, that is. There's nothing wrong like being on top of the mountain. And I think we have had a full day today.
Yep.
We have had a full day today.
Missed the first 50 minutes.
In silence. But see, that heard the
risk. We were doing that for our poor colds. We'll have a silent.
I was resting my cold. My cold was killing me. It was killing me. Now, there's only one thing that I think we have to go out with, and that is what?
Lobby?
Oh, no. I think
like everybody else, it's a find a lobby.
It's a three-ring circus. But we'll all make it through it.
Barnum and Bailey Worley.
That's right. So, everybody, this is the last word from Michael Lawson and Thomas Fortenberry. And we wish that you all have a great weekend this Friday. Beautiful day out here, February 13th. No, 13th, February 14th, 2013. And I am going to rest my voice and see how good I can be in the next couple of days. You know what, though? Oh, it's been so nice. Okay, I'm sorry. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and kiddies, it's been great. This has been the last word. Michael Lawson, Thomas Fortenberry. Thank you so much. It's Friday. And get out and go to that Centennial for Delta, Sigma, Theta.
He could let the know. There's a love. to be so kind and keep the people laughing. But no one knows that beneath the clouds and it's turned up now, left a lonely beggar. They bring the curtain down. Life is a three-ring circuit, all of the ups and downs of a carousel that I know so well. Life is a three-ring circuit, just the three.